Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
All right, good morning, everybody. Beautiful weekend. Beautiful morning. Weather going to be changing a little bit later on this week. Get your lawn thatched.
Yeah.
And fertilized.
Oh, yeah.
And you will be thanking us by this time next week.
I'm 100% in. Did it.
Done.
Good.
Yeah.
Ready.
Ready to go.
Absolutely.
Good.
So we are now less than 2 weeks away from the, just about a little over 2 weeks away. Just a little over, shade over 2 weeks away. From the NFL draft. And I found this interesting. I always love reading Peter King's Football Morning in America article. It's just chock full of great nuggets, great information. This one I read with a bit of a smile on my face because you know how I feel about drafting quarterbacks high up in the first round. I think it reeks of desperation. It's a herd mentality.
Sure.
It's a panic move, right?
Yes.
So here's what he had included in his article today. Now, he sets it up by saying, I'll give you the quote in a second, but let me, because I thought this was fascinating what he did. He said, and he attributed this quote I'm about to read to you to one middle-aged coach whose team is in the market to draft a quarterback this year. One middle-aged coach whose team is in the market to trade a quarterback. Who could that be? So I started thinking, all right, who are the teams that are in the market to draft a quarterback that has a middle-aged coach? Okay?
Well, it depends on what you call, what would you define as a middle-aged coach?
Middle-aged coach would be 50 or above, at least.
But it wouldn't be, see, middle-aged coach to me is 45 to 55.
Oh, you're talking about coaching middle age, not just real life middle age.
I'm talking okay. About a coaching middle age, like the 30 something year olds or the early 40s. No. And once you get into the Vic Fangio, you're not a middle aged coach. You're an old dude. Vic Fangio's old.
All right. See, I would still put Vic
in
the middle age.
No, he's the oldest. He and Pete Carroll, the oldest coaches in football. You're not a middle-aged coach.
See, if he's saying middle-aged,
how many coaches are in their 60s?
Okay, but if you're talking about middle age in this article, I think he's talking about older coaches.
Old.
Blame it.
Older. So like middle-aged coaches, when he says middle-aged coaches, he's talking about old coaches?
All right, is Robert Saleh a middle-aged coach?
No. No, Robert Saleh is probably in his early 40s.
Okay, I don't think he fits this criteria.
Right, he's a young coach.
Okay, so he's not middle-aged.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick is middle-aged.
Dude, Bill Belichick is 70 or whatever. He's not middle-aged. In a coaching fraternity, you're old as the hills. See, you're trying to make something that's not, no, I'm not going to let you know.
I'm just wondering if Vic Fangio might have been the quote.
No, he's an old. He's a curmudgeon. He's old. He's, you know, his head's going to fall off.
Oh,
I mean,
All right.
Like in the coach, I'm just talking about not in life. I'm talking about in coaching.
All right.
I mean, one of the things that was always said about Vic Fangio is, man, you know, he's getting his first chance. He's one of the oldest coaches to ever get his first chance. He's, what is he, 63, 64?
See, I would think of him when I think of middle-aged coaches in the NFL, I would put Vic, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick.
Old dude. Let me tell you middle-aged.
Yeah,
all right?
Tell me who the middle-aged coaches are in the
NFL. Let's just get.
I know we are burying the lead here, but I want to get this established.
Middle-aged. Not Buffalo, not Miami. New England's old. New York is young.
Okay.
Mike Tomlin's middle-aged.
Mike Tomlin, middle-aged.
I don't think of him. Jim Harbaugh is middle-aged.
John Harbaugh, excuse me.
Yeah. Cincinnati, young. Cleveland, young. Houston, old dude, 60s. First time coach.
Okay.
Young and old. He's both young and old at the same time.
All right, right.
That doesn't make him middle-aged.
Frank Reich?
Frank Reich would be a middle-aged coach.
All right.
Mike Vrabel? Vrabel is a little younger than me. Yeah, I would give him a middle-aged coach.
All right.
Coach.
So then, all right. Then there's no way to really figure out who this is.
You were trying to say that you thought it was Vic Fangio.
I think it's older. I think it's an older coach. All right. Doesn't matter. All right.
All right.
Here's the quote from this middle-aged coach whose team is in the market to draft a quarterback this year. Quote, I have never seen quarterbacks get pushed up in the draft the way they're getting pushed up this year. Trevor Lawrence deserves to be the number one pick, but after that, in my book, there's three receivers, a tight end, and two offensive tackles ahead of the next quarterback.
Sure.
But this desperation for quarterbacks, ..
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So why, if this thing is being fueled by desperation, and people are acknowledging that the odds are not good that this guy that you're going to draft is going to work out, but you're still doing it because of desperation, then I don't want the Broncos to fall victim to that groupthink, that herd mentality. Be better than that.
Yeah, that's exactly why I don't think they will. That's exactly why I think they're going to disappoint DMAC and, you know, in the wave the flag for any quarterback will do, they're all going to be great crowd. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I was talking to a coach yesterday that was like, I think that Pitts from Florida is the best player in this draft. Like, the guy is exceptional and the versatility that guy brings. You know, and then there's, we get in and out of this conversation at times, like the Y versus the F, like the Y tight end versus the F movement guy, right? Or the H or whatever you want to call that guy. And this particular coach is like, that dude's skill set, he goes, he's not only the best tight end, I think he's the best wide receiver in this class. And so at that point you say, well, if you need a Y, guess what you do? You draft one in the sixth round and you get yourself a bruiser, right? But that dude is special. And what it does to a defense, you've got to make a decision. Are we going to match you up in base? Are we going to have to play nickel to base? Or when, like, it creates, is he playing Y? Is he playing F? Is he actually an X receiver in this particular formation? You've got to make a decision. And that puts mental stress on a defense, and it opens up the other parts of your offense with that guy. So, yeah, whoever that middle-aged coach is, he's 100% right.
Probably the way we should look at it is determine who the quarterback needy or the quarterback teams that might be in the market, and then look at their coaches.
I'm going to text Peter right now and say, define middle-aged coach.
Just say, yeah, text him right now and say, we are really having a hard time trying to figure out what you mean by middle age. All right?
All right.
Text him right now.
I am.
Mark's
going
to text Peter King right now. We'll see if we get an answer. And also, if the Broncos do choose to draft a quarterback high, would it be the worst thing if they ended up with Justin Fields? That's next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
So if.
By the way, did Peter King get back to you yet?
Hold on, let me check.
Let's see. Not yet.
That's
but
okay.
I will keep you posted.
Okay.
I will keep you posted.
He posted a cryptic quote in his Football Morning in America article today in referring to one middle-aged coach whose team is in the market to draft a quarterback this year. And we're trying to figure out who that might be.
Right.
But we could even get out of the starting blocks because you and I have a complete disagreement about what middle age is.
Yeah. You want to put Vic as a middle-aged coach.
Basically, anybody not named Sean McVay is middle-aged by your definition.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. No. No, that's not. I don't think that's it. I think middle age in coaching, when he's talking about, I think of guys that are all 50 or above.
But there's got to be a cutoff. You, at some point,
as
you
I
go
said,
from
50 or above.
No, I'm on the high end, it's got to be, where do you cut it off? You can't have some old dude.
See, I still think of, I think of guys like Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick as middle age. I don't think of them as old.
In the coaching profession, they're as old as the hills.
Okay. All right. Let's not spend too much. Let's not spend too much time on this. If the Broncos do choose to go after a quarterback, the way it's leaning right now is they would have to settle, air quotes, settle for Justin Fields. That he would probably be, the way it's looking right now, subject to change, but the way it's looking right now, he'd be the fifth quarterback taken. And that, you know, somehow they'd be settling for the fifth guy. I'll tell you what, I think Justin Fields, in this whole debate, has been getting a raw deal compared to a lot of the other quarterbacks. So I'm again referencing the Football Morning in America article. And they reference, Peter King references, your friends at Pro Football Focus.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love those guys.
All right. So they have a stat for everything when it comes to these quarterbacks, right?
Yes, they do.
So check this one out. Pro Football Focus's grade on throws past first read. Kind of an interesting stat, because you're always talking about how in college, not only are guys throwing to open receivers, not throwing to windows, but they're usually first read type guys. It's, you know, hey, here's the first read, throw to it. Very rarely do you see college quarterbacks forced to really go 1 to 2 to 3 running through all their different reads, right?
Yeah, well, there's very few schemes that even, because of the way, right, the way that the speed with which they play on the offensive side of the ball, the hash marks also incredibly different. There are so many one receiver read type of plays where they only have one receiver they're going to throw to. Like that's in many instances, that's how college football works. So like that would be, to me, that would be a, I'll let you give the stat, but it would be a skewed statistic. First read, well, if the first read is open and that's your only read, guess what? Guess who you're going to throw it to? Like, does that not skew the statistic? These are the problems.
I know.
Okay,
but
go ahead.
Okay,
give it to me.
But here it is. This is Pro Football Focus.
Straight no chasing.
Grade on throws past the first read. Minimum of 60 attempts.
Past the first read.
Past the first read. A minimum of 60 attempts. So these are quarterbacks that all had at least 60 attempts at it.
Okay.
All right. Justin Fields is ranked first. Pro Football Focus grade of 90.6. Then Zach Wilson. Then Trey Lance. Trevor Lawrence is seventh. Mac Jones is eighth. Now, when you couple that with what my man Joel Klatt texted me last week and his breakdown of Justin Fields, who he has seen by his estimation 10 times over the last couple of years, said, quote, as athletically gifted as any quarterback I've been around, very accurate to every spot on the field, can hold the ball too long at times. However, he does not lock on to the number one progression. Sometimes holds the ball because he's big, strong, fast, and can make plays. Needs to learn to give up on plays sooner and burn the ball. Excellent leader, who is one of the sole reasons the Big Ten ever even played football this season. Ryan Day's system is not simple. He learned it and executed it wonderfully. Never heard anyone at Ohio State talk bad about his work ethic ever. So all I'm saying is, if I don't want the Broncos to draft a quarterback in the first round, but if they choose to and they end up with Justin Fields compared to the other guys, I don't know. Would that be such a bad thing?
No, I think, I think the thing for me with Justin Fields is look at that game against, was it Clemson, where he just gets the rib shot and still comes out and plays his butt off. Now, they ended up losing the national championship game to Alabama, right? But when you have that ability to overcome, like, you're going to have that, right? And still play well injured, still play well dinged up, still play well as they're getting after you. That's important. I would say that, you know, you have to, like, all secondary reads and throws are not created equal simply because sometimes you're going through the progression. Sometimes, you know what? The first read isn't open and you start to scramble. And when you start to scramble, guys drop coverage. And then all of a sudden you're thrown to wide open targets again when you're athletic. So, like, the Mac Jones things, is the Mac Jones, because he's scrambling, holding on to the ball and things are coming available like Russell Wilson? No. So to me, his completion percentage would be interesting to see how many times he actually got to the second or third in his progression based on what they were asking him to do versus how many times did he break out of the pocket and get to a secondary read. The completely different skill set and should be weighed differently. That's why that statistic sucks.
You hate Pro Football Focus. We'll talk to Troy Rank coming up in about 20 minutes. Did Michael Malone go too far in trying to make a point yesterday in the fourth quarter? We'll talk about that and so much more with Troy. But we have four down territory coming up next. Real quick, I got a text from my buddy Mitch Heider. Long time.
He was
here with the fan
sure.
for years and years and years. Long time voice of the Denver Pioneers. He goes, man, Stink. He just sent me a text. Stink just bummed me out. I went from middle age to older without even knowing it. Bummed a lot of people out because I think a lot of people went into this conversation
right.
thinking they were merely middle age, and based
right.
on your criteria, they're now walking out of it old.
Just think about this. You're a lot closer to the end than you are the beginning, Mitch.
Oh, jeez. That is just
true.
Such a Richard Nine comment right there. All right, four down territory next.
Professional football in America is a special game.
This is four down territory.
I'd like to start out with a thank you to John Elway.
That just happened.
Now, I'll kill a snitch. I'm not saying I have. I'm not saying I have.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountain?
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for.
First down.
There's a play-action rollout for Trask. Now stepping back, looking to throw it back to the left side. He's got Pitts, and Pitts waltzes in. Touchdown, Gators! Oh, my! It's 13-7. Fantastic.
Gator radio right there. Kyle Pitts hype is building as we close in 2 weeks away from the draft to the point where many people believe whoever drafts Kyle Pitts will be getting the best player in this draft. Mel Kiper said he is the highest graded tight end prospect Kiper has seen in the last 43 years.
Wow. What does that go back to? Who was the tight end 43 years ago that he was looking at?
So that would be what, in the early...
like Winslow or
80s,
something?
80s, maybe. Yeah, maybe, maybe.
Kellen Winslow?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. So when I get a text from somebody who said, Kyle Pitts doesn't block anybody, my response is, who cares? Is that a fair response? I know, you're Mr. But you can have two tight ends out there and have one tight end whose job it is to block, 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 and then the other guy who's just a matchup nightmare.
Yeah, you know what? There are certain guys that it's important that they block. And then there are certain guys that you look at and say he is such a talented player and such a, like you said, a mismatch nightmare. Ultimately, would I like everybody to be able to block? Yeah, it's part of the requirement. But that dude's a little bit of different story. So you make concessions for guys that have that kind of talent. And it's not like he can't block anybody. I think a lot of times you don't ask him to because he's so valuable outside the box, outside the numbers.
Next in four down territory.
Second down.
That time it was Cunningham. So now Francois trying to answer. Takes a downfield shot. Nobody open. It's an interception. Forced in there, and Caleb Farley makes the pick.
ESPN there with the call. So if the Broncos choose to go corner in the first round, Caleb Farley's name has been mentioned. But there's been some concern about Farley's injury history at Virginia Tech. Well, he had a good day at the medicals in Indianapolis on Friday. Some of the top, 150 draft prospect medical rechecks. And Farley was told by NFL docs that he has been cleared for the 2021 season. Chris Sims, Bill's boy, says Farley is a, quote, generational talent at cornerback. How much should the Broncos be thinking about taking a corner, even though they are loaded up at corner for this year?
I think you can't have enough quality corners, and especially corners that are good football players. And Surtain is probably one of the best football players, happens to play corner. Strong, physical, just press, knock guys around, not afraid. He would be like a Vic Fangio type of corner. Can play man, can press people, will come up and run support and try to knock you out. Like, he is that type. He's got great football lineage because of what his dad did in this league. So he understands how to play the game. Very much like, Antoine Winfield Jr. for Tampa Bay. Just comes in and is a difference maker from day one. I think that's what you're getting with Surtain.
Next in four down territory.
Third down.
Still have the passion and the fire in this last season. You know, just reminded me, you know, like a lot of people I can still play and still play at a really, really high level. And I feel like I can do this for a number of years moving forward. At the same time, I feel like I can host Jeopardy. And I'd love to. I think I bring something different to the show.
Aaron Rodgers talking about hosting Jeopardy. He loved it. Apparently they loved him. So much so that Aaron Rodgers would like to be considered to be the permanent Jeopardy host moving forward while still playing football. The rationale is that a year's worth of Jeopardy shows are taped in 46 days.
Correct.
So the idea being that it would be easy during the NFL's off months
to tape all the shows. Oh, yeah, he could do that no problem. He lives right out there in California, two in the off season. Run in there, knock a bunch of shows out. That'd be great, man. Super smart dude, obviously.
I like it. I know that right now Ken Jennings is considered the
front runner.
But I heard Rodgers.
How about news?
I heard Rodgers with some other thoughts on this. He said, and he didn't say this with, you know, bravado. He said,
cram it up your cram hole on the floor.
I would help bring a different kind of audience to the show.
Sure.
Maybe a younger audience. And then sort of give the whole franchise, the whole Jeopardy franchise, a much needed, maybe more youthful shot in the arm. I like it.
I think it's a great idea.
But he wants to do it.
Yeah.
He loved it. Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
I love Tom Brady.
So apparently Tom Brady is friends with golfer Tony Finau.
Finau, yeah.
And during the rain delay at the Masters on Saturday, Brady called Tony Finau to give him a pep talk. That's kind of cool. You're kind of chilling. How do you handle it? What are you doing? And then your phone rings and Tom Brady's calling you.
TB12 on the other line. I wonder if he's got an assistant that actually gets you on the line first before they hand it over to TB12. Hello, I've got TB12 for Tony. Yeah, this is Tony. Okay, hold on for TB12. And then he gets on. What's up, Tony? Think that happens?
Tom just calls. So here's what happened. So at Augusta.
Okay.
There are very few spots on the entire course where cell phones are actually allowed. And one of them is where the Caddyshack is. There's actually a Caddyshack.
Right.
Caddy HQ or whatever.
Right.
So, one of the members of Augusta National, had his phone and he walked over to Finau and said, somebody wants to talk to you. And it was Tom Brady on FaceTime. And Brady immediately said about giving Finau grief for stopping play for a little rain. He said, in the NFL, when it rains, we don't stop. Finau said, maybe we're not as tough as you guys. So they had a little joke back and forth.
Right.
And, then he went on and continued to play.
I love that.
Tom Brady.
Wish Tom Brady would call with some encouragement for me. And all these fans
I know, you
mad
guys had,
at me.
You guys had all these conversations during the season. I thought you guys were buddies.
You know I would act so cool, though. Hey, what up, TB? What's going on?
Sup?
Man, I'm on my show, you know, just grinding, man.
Yeah,
just
hey,
grinding.
What's going on?
Gosh, that would be awesome. Just awesome.
Now, though, for 4 Down Territory, our tour on the NFL, bring that to you each and every morning at 7:30. Troy Rank joins us. We got a lot of ground to cover with Troy, from Michael Malone's handling of Nikola Jokic to the Avalanche bringing in an arch nemesis to help them win a Stanley Cup, to the Nolan Arenado front office feud. What side is he on? We'll talk to Troy next. Troy Rank is our Denver 7 insider. He is presented by ROX, Rocks Heating and Air. All right, Troy, got a lot of ground to cover with you. Good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing super. Any insight into the Nuggets' fourth quarter fail the other day and the way Michael Malone handled Nikola Jokic and talking about the fact that you've got to learn that you're not going to get those calls. You can't let that frustration take you out of your game.
Yeah, I mean, the bench let him down. The Nuggets bench was awful yesterday. That happens sometimes in the NBA, but that's a game they thought they were going to win, should have won. You know, Malone, to his credit, I think he understands with this team, they can do something special, and sometimes you're trying to teach something along the journey. And with Jokic, they can't get into a playoff game, a game five or something, and get him wrapped up in the officials. And he used to do this a couple of years ago, and he'd get teased, and you know, and it would ruin his games. I think he was just trying to send a message to remind him, we've got to have you on the floor. You can make your case, and I'll stick up for you, but don't let it affect your game. But the reason they lost yesterday, their bench was terrible.
I thought it was actually kind of cool, kind of refreshing, that people were so upset with the way that they played in the fourth quarter, that expectations for this team are so high, that what happened was so jarring for so many people. I mean, this is a team that had won 8 in a row and 17 of their last 20. But it speaks to how high the expectations have become with this team, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially since the acquisition of Gordon. I mean, because of the fact they were undefeated with him, they look different, more dynamic. You know, Gordon's ability to score in transition, defend on the perimeter. I would say this, and it's not an excuse. They were due a clunker without Murray. There's times Murray disappears where we all get a little perplexed, given his star ability, if you will. But yesterday they missed him. When that game started to slip, you know, they needed a guy who could just score, you know, score 10 straight points, 8 straight points. And that's where in the playoffs we saw that Murray, where things got greasy, and all of a sudden it's a three, and a layup, and an and one. So, but you're right. That's what fans have grown to expect now with this team over the last 2-3 weeks. They expect this team to reach the NBA Finals for the first time in franchise history. And I think that's realistic. The playoffs are a different animal, no doubt, but that's realistic for this team.
Troy, I think one of the cool things is we're in the same situation with the Avalanche, right? Those two teams are both expected to, you know, the Avalanche in the Stanley Cup, and the Nuggets, people expect them to get to the NBA Finals. So I think it's cool to have those expectations. What'd you make of the trade they made this weekend for the backup goaltender?
Yeah, I mean, they need depth, and it's not because we don't trust Grubauer. I do now. I mean, there's been times in the last few years you just, like, is he elite enough to win a steal a game or two in the playoffs? And we saw, not necessarily. That's different this year. Everything about him says that he's a top goaltender and can do it when it counts. Now, he'll have to prove it. But adding goalie depth, for if nothing else, it allows him to kind of catch his breath here before they get to the playoffs. Because in the playoffs, the top goalie plays every game. So you need a guy to help take some of that pressure off in the games, of those regular season games leading up to that. And what takes pressure off a goalie, and reason I like it, is their ability to score at any time offensively. They are now 24-3-2 when they score the first goal of a game. I mean, they are like, you know, when Peyton Manning had his offense, they score and you're just, the other team is skating uphill from jump. So this team is so talented. They remind a lot of people of the, you know, the 2000 and 2001 team that won it. You know, I covered the Avs in 96, 97, 98, all their home games, and that team was just all-stars and eventually Hall of Famers across the board. I don't know if these guys Hall of Famers. Nathan McKinnon certainly is going to have that case, but they just have, and Cale Makar for sure. I mean, they just have an ability to beat you in so many ways, and now you've got some depth to protect Grubauer.
Kind of funny, isn't it? Devin Dubnyk was kind of, during the years that he was with Minnesota, was really, the Avalanche Wild rivalry is never, you know, intense, but, you know, he was right there in the middle of it, and a guy that Avalanche players and certainly Avalanche fans kind of came to dislike. Isn't it kind of this is what I love about hockey, is just the idea that he's an enemy one day, he's your guy the next.
Yeah, and I saw when he did his Zoom, Dubnyk said that Gabe Landeskog had texted him and reminded him of the fight they got into a couple years ago, where Dubnyk was poke checking him in his foot and ankle area, and then it was on. The Landy was turning around and throwing fists, but that's hockey. I mean, that is hockey. Guys, for the most part, if it's not cheap shot or, you know, a back check, they respect that. I mean, that's just that fabric of the sport that makes it so different than other sports. That we're gonna fight and punch each other, and then off the ice, you can still be cool with it. And yeah, I like it. I like it, and I think he's gonna fit in well. I really do.
Yeah, you know, I was telling Mike earlier, it reminded me of Romanowski. I hated him when he played. When I played in Washington, he played in San Fran. I hated him. Then he went to Philly. I hated him. And then we got together here in Denver. It's like, man, what a great teammate. You know, it is one of those situations. Speaking of the Broncos, like, where are we right now with this organization? So much talk about the quarterback situation. If you had to kind of just assess and read the tea leaves, what do you think they do at 9 as you've had a weekend to kind of let this stuff marinate?
Yeah, they're not done doing their research on, you know, Justin Fields, Trey Lance. I don't know where it stands with Mac Jones. I'm not as sure on that. But with Lance and Fields having another pro day, which these pro days are a little bit eyewash, but you guys know how this goes. They're not done yet. Does that mean they're not in love with one, that they won't move up? I still kind of, that's my belief right now, that they're not really leaning toward moving up because of the how many draft picks it would cost and the multiple holes it could leave on the roster, especially if you miss. It's not that they'd be scared to it, but you have to be in love, and I haven't gotten that from my sources yet. So where are they now? If they have one false to them at 9, I would be surprised if they don't take it, if that's either Fields or Lance. I think if one falls and sitting there on the board, that you almost have to take him, because you don't want to be in the top 10 drafting again. The idea is you won't have this opportunity for the next 10 years, hopefully. So if one were to fall, I think they'd still be ready to pounce and be nimble enough. But I still believe their best path is either to stay at 9 and take a Micah Parsons or Patrick Surtain. I say Surtain because, again, Callahan and Fuller both could be gone after this season. And you look at trading back. You know, you look at trading back and picking up a second-round pick, perhaps. There's a lot of options, but if you trade back, you could get an edge rusher, maybe one of the guys from Miami, and in the second round, go get a running back. I love those kids from North Carolina. I mean, that's why this draft is so fascinating to me. These first two rounds could change their season if this draft falls a certain way.
Finally, Troy, after a weekend in which they got swept in San Francisco, where do you come down on the Nolan Arenado versus Dick Montfort, Jeff Breidich tiff?
I'm siding with the player. I mean, I'm always going to side with the player on that. People want to say, you know, this, you know, oh, he was sending text to Wainwright saying, tell Mozeliak to look at my swing. I mean, really, are we going to be daytime Emmy drama and take everything literal that a guy sends in a text? It was known in baseball Nolan was unhappy. I think if Nolan had to do it over again, if I were him, I would have said after the initial dust-up with Breidich 2 years ago, I want out, I want to be traded. Leave no ambiguity. I think that's where it's hard. It's like, well, he never really asked out. It was known internally he wanted out. He wanted to just move on. Should he have taken the money? And that's where, again, I had texted him back when that was happening. Like, hey, if you get that offer, just understand how it ended with Tulowitzki. There's a reason Matt Holliday didn't take their money. So the idea that they were going to build around him, you know, that was, for me, that strains credulity. I just didn't see that because I've never seen him do that. But it just went sour, and I'm not going to hold a text that he might have sent a guy he knows from All-Star games or off-season. Literally, everyone internally knew what was happening when they met after the 19th season. It was over. The relationship ended at that point, and they should have traded him then. They would have got a much better trade package, and they would not have had to pay a team to take the greatest player in franchise history.
Okay, did he sign the deal here, the $260 million deal, with the intention that he still wanted out?
That is not my understanding from my conversations with him. This is, you know, these are a few years ago. And that's not my understanding the way it played out. He really believed, honestly, and perhaps naively, when he signed that deal and sat there in Scottsdale, that, and again, you have to understand, when someone puts $260, $300 million in front of you, that's generational money. That's his grandkids' money. So that's part of it, where you look at it and go, okay, and then they give you an opt-out, so it allows for some elasticity. But when he signed that deal, it was never with the idea, I'm leaving. He really believed at that time they would add players. And when they met after the 19th season, the conversation was, Nolan, yeah, you might hit 35 home runs and drive in 120 and you're the greatest fielding third baseman ever, but we need you to be more of a leader. We need you to be more of a rah-rah guy. And, oh, by the way, we're not adding any free agents because all of my previous free agents I added all stunk and we have no room to add free agents. That's when the relationship soured. He was like, you know who I was when you signed me. All I do is show up and go to work, roll up my sleeves. He's never been a rah-rah guy. He doesn't pitch, and he's not a pitching coach. And he didn't sign the guys that left you with no money. And that was the final straw. He's like, they were telling him, you've got to be better if we're going to be better. And he's looking around like, what? We've got to be better by adding new players. We're not winning with the guys we have. And that's where it just went off the rails.
All right, Troy, man, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much.
You got it, sir.
Troy Rank, presented by ROX Rocks Heating and Air. Cover a lot of ground there with Troy. Everything, Nuggets, Avs, Broncos, and Rockies. So you want to react to what he had to say? A lot to unpack there. Hit us up on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Some quick reaction. Hilarious. No one expects the Nuggets to go to the finals. Yeah, we hope, but stop it. No one expects the Nuggets to beat LeBron and AD. Stop it. Well, that is interesting, because as of right now, with what, about still looking at 18, 20 games left for teams to play this season, the Nuggets would play the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs.
But that, it changed that, when those guys are injured.
They've been out. They've been out for a long time. And at what point, I mean, you tell me, you know what it's like to be hurt and trying to come back. At what point would they both have to come back, LeBron and AD, to be able to get enough regular season play to be really, really ready to go for playoff basketball in the first round?
Yeah, I think they would be very concerned. I think if they came back with about six games left, Mike, and got into a rotation, and like, you can ride the bike, the stationary bike, or you can do the Peloton thing, or, you know, whatever it is you're doing, but nothing replaces moving up and down the court, right? From a shape, from a getting in basketball shape standpoint. And the amount of minutes that LeBron plays when it comes to playoff time in a 48-minute game, that dude is playing, you know, 42, 46 minutes. So to have that level of cardiovascular fitness, basketball fitness, it's going to take five or six games to get him into that. Like, for me, if you were coming right into a situation where you were in the playoffs and you were playing a bad team, that would be different. Right? You're playing a team that you know you're going to jump over the top of, but that would be a horrible matchup for the Lakers to draw the Nuggets in the first round. If if AD and LeBron don't have five, six, seven warm-up games to get themselves into some, you know, to some level of NBA fitness and just, you know, knocking off the rust.
All right, so that's my point, is that you're looking at, you know, will they have enough time to get up to speed to take on a team,
right,
and beat a team like the Nuggets? And also, there's just the matter of, where's their motivation? Where's the hunger? They're defending champions.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to come back after being out for a while, not only gel, but also have that same kind of camaraderie, chemistry, hunger that they had last year, in which they were so dominant in the playoffs? There are other teams I'd rather play than the Lakers in the first round.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong. But I wouldn't look at playing the Lakers in the first round as, oh, that was fun. We're done. We have no chance.
I agree with
you. I think it'd be a lot different this year as compared to last year for the reasons we just talked about. This is KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.